Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk.
Here at Loch Associates Group, people are our business. Use our flexi retainer against any of our employment law, HR, health and wellbeing, and mediation services. All at a price that suits your business and with no long-term contracts. Use this time to recover and grow your business and let Loch Associates Group deal with your people needs. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and sadly Jules isn't with us today because she's feeling poorly and we wish her a speedy and full recovery as soon as possible. But I've got two fantastic guests in the studio that we're going to be talking to shortly, Nicola and Shane, and I shall introduce them formally in a minute, but I just want to get settled back into the show. I'll read a couple of emails and then we're going to talk to Shane and Nicola. So, leading Southeast law firm Warner Solicitors have been awarded the prestigious Deal of the Year Award by the Kent Corporate Finance Alliance. These awards recognise the best deals completed by KCFA members during 2023. The firm was commended for its role in acting for Infinity Group on its acquisition of Redkite CRM in September 2023. The judges Hugh Minnock and Roshan Puri from YFM Private Equity were impressed by the interesting acquisition that involved Kent-based advisors Warners and Crowe, and with acquisition finance provided by HSBC Home Counties. Of particular interest was the ESG angle to the deal, with Redkite CRM being a dedicated provider of Microsoft Dynamics 365 solutions, products and managed services to the social housing sector in the UK. The acquisition marks the next step in Infinity Group's expansion strategy. The group now has 150 full-time employees and has expanded its customer base and capabilities to deliver hyper-focused solutions to the social housing sector. So, congratulations, Warners, and congratulations to the Infinity Group. And social housing is something that's incredibly important in this country, and we don't have enough of. We need council houses. Absolutely. I'm old school. I'm old school, me. Yeah. Council houses, that's what we need. It's one of the biggest problems we face is housing in this country. It affects everything, and we don't often think about that enough when we're talking about all kinds of other things, you know.
Basic needs.
Yeah, it is. You know, you've got to live somewhere, and the cost of housing, whether you're buying or renting, is extortionate, especially in the southeast of England. So it's something that we've kind of have kicked into the long grass an awful lot and not thought about enough. A couple of events taking place over the next week or so are Westrum Networking. We hope you can join us on December the 13th for our next meeting for Westrum-focused businesses. We're delighted to be able to host this meeting at the Georgian Dragon on the High Street. The meeting sponsors are Reign Supreme Accountants. That's a lovely name, isn't it? Reign Supreme. Monica Filano will be speaking on the following topic: why you need to know your numbers and how often you should review your cash flow, including your working capital. So Westrum Networking takes place at the Georgian Dragon in the High Street, Westrum, on December the 13th, 10:30 until 12. All these that I'm about to give you, you can book by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Canada. Networking. This is one of my favourites.
Networking.
Yeah. This event welcomes local businesses and individuals to network face-to-face while offering an opportunity to build valuable business relationships while enjoying a lovely walk. Right up your street, Nicola.
Yeah,
you like a walk, don't you? You like a walk.
I like being out with nature.
Yeah. The walk will take around 1 hour with refreshments provided by Thackeray Williams Solicitors. Meet outside the cafe at Chartwell, dressed in your best Christmas outfit. Ooh. You've got to go as a fairy. You've got to go as a fairy. And it's taking place on December the 15th, 10:30 to 12:30. As always, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Canada to find out more and to book your place. And finally, Tunbridge Wells Networking. We hope you can join us for our last third Thursday's networking meeting of 2023 at Sankey's Seafood Kitchen and Bar. Situated in a Victorian manor house on Mount Ephraim in the heart of Tunbridge Wells, the Seafood Kitchen and Bar follows in the family's tradition of running great pubs and restaurants. Councillor Matthew Sankey, owner of Sankey's and Tunbridge Wells Borough Council's Small Business Champion, will be giving a short talk. We're also delighted to welcome Jenny Kitchen and Peter Kenyon to talk about the launch of Amplify.tw. This is taking place on December the 21st, 10:30 until 12, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar to find out more and book your place. Sounds like fun. Right. It's time to talk to somebody sensible now.
Yeah. Done about that.
Oh, go on. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome for the very first time onto the Business Bunker show, Shane Foster and Nicola Brandon of The Education People. Shane, Nicola, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm really pleased to see you. We kind of met up a couple of weeks ago to talk about what you're doing and relaunch some of the things that I've been involved in the past in a very minor way. I want to kick off. There's two or three things I want to talk to you guys about. Yeah. I want to talk about you. I want some background to each of you. Yeah. I want to talk about the education people in general, you know, what it is, why it is, and then we're going to focus, drill down on what it is you guys are doing and trying to do. Yeah. So who wants to go first? Tell us a little bit about each of you.
I'll kick off. Shane, to start with. I've got two young children that, as much as their bundle of joy drive me crazy, like anyone does at age 2 and 5, so you can imagine.
Lovely.
Actually having a bit of peace and quiet here today is actually quite nice. But yeah, for me really, I kind of started my working background really, because that kind of leading quite nicely to what we do really. For many years ago now, I used to work in a young offenders institution. So I worked in the youth justice state for 12 years, which, as you can imagine, is quite a challenging environment to be in.
Was that Cookham?
Yeah, it was next door to it. There was a secure training centre there. So I started there years ago when I was 20, so I wasn't that much older than the young people that are inside.
It could have gone either way.
Exactly. That's why my hair's starting to go now, for being there for 12 years. But it's a great learning curve and a perfect opportunity to grow, learn, and especially from a professional point of view to where I am today, really. So yeah, done a number of roles there, really, and I think that the real benefit from working in there was actually just supporting and helping, and how rewarding it could be to...
It's interesting, isn't it? I've actually done a few careers events at Cookham Wood. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Over the years. I did one last year, which I hadn't done for a couple of years. And it's interesting meeting these young people.
Yeah.
Because, and this is a theme we're going to be discussing all the way through this conversation, I guess. But even though that they've got themselves in trouble, there's a lot of underlying talent in some of those places.
Massive.
Yeah. And you look at it. I really apologise. I can't remember the lad's name. But I met a young lad there, 16 or 17, I think, and he developed an interest in radio. And they had a small kind of setup at Cookham Wood that he was using. And I was blown away by this lad, because you couldn't admit, when you looked at him, you thought, oh, he's going to be trouble. He was like 6'3", big bloke. But he was, hello, sir. Oh, I'm really interested. And he was the nicest lad you've ever met in your life. Yeah. You always want to ask why they're in there, but you kind of don't really know. Because you don't really need to know, just being nosy. And he was the nicest and cleverest lad I'd come across for a long, long time. And I just thought, do you know what? If you keep your nose clean, whatever it was that got you into trouble, if you can keep your nose clean, you've got a bright future in front of you. Yeah.
And there's a lot of young people at a particular age that are in a similar circumstance where, like I say, they've got the world at their feet, in a sense, with talent that they just need to do and just refocus. So it's really rewarding to go through there. I've done a number of different roles, and towards the end I kind of worked in the education part, which I really enjoyed, because that's the bit where you really see, like you said there, the skill set and the talent that some of these young people do have, and it's just showcasing how they can use that in the right way,
absolutely,
to benefit them and in the future,
Without boring you with too many stories. I used to work for a charity in Peckham in South East London that was trying to find work for ex-offenders, youth offenders.
Yeah.
And you talk to employers and they go, well, what do they know? I go, he's been dealing Class A drugs on the streets of West London since he was 11 years old. He knows sales inside out, mate. Yeah. Trust me on this. He can sell you anything.
He's got great transferable skills he can use in your business.
Exactly. You know, and although that sounds gross, but it is, you know, the talent, the skills that people have, the fact that they've misused them for whatever reason, you know, their background, they're you know, coerced into it or whatever, you know, there's always a backstory to it. But the skills are the things that are important.
Yeah.
If you can identify those skills and direct them in a much more useful way, you're going to get on, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. It helps to break that cycle, doesn't it, as well? They're staying out of these establishments. So, yeah, for me, working in the education was the real eye-opener, really, how you could get into the minds of young people and really get them to realise their talent, because a lot of these young people don't want to go to school. That's the reason why they're here, in a sense. So
exactly.
If you're doing the normal traditional route of schooling, in a sense, it isn't necessarily going to work. So actually it's being looking at how dynamic and we can kind of utilise our curriculum to meet their needs and showcase their talents and they can see for that. So yeah, it was that for me, that was a real good period of time at a young age where I progressed through the career ladder to kind of probably take on more than I could chew at that particular time. But you learn the hard way, don't you?
You do.
For me, it was a great opportunity to do that. So, and then on the back of that, really, it come to the point where 12 years in a should say, like here, really, when you're in a confined room talking to people,
you don't want to do that, Shane. No, that's really sad.
It was quite a time to think, actually, do I kind of go and broaden my experience further afield? Reach out to a different, but yeah, again, keeping that fundamental part of working with people, helping them, guiding them, supporting them, and giving them that kind of need, really. So yeah, then that's where I kind of led on to go and work at the University of Kent. So slightly different, so keeping within education, kind of working for supporting one of their creative roles. But yeah, again, that was focused on young people getting into the creative industries, not necessarily through the way that many people do go through university. Always, if you know a friend of a friend, that can give you that first opportunity. So it's looking at young people that have got that talent but just haven't got that voice or kind of that support or network around them that can, one, financially help them to make that progress through. So it was that was great working across Kent and South Essex as well, and really identifying some of these young people. And then that kind of led into where we're at today, and obviously we'll touch more on about the role within the education people. But yeah, a bit of a different journey for some people.
But you've got a theme running through your career, which is helping young people and education and work.
Yeah, young people and adults. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that is
absolutely
100%.
All right, let's hear from Nicola. Let's hear a bit of background about Nicola.
Well, background about me. So I started off, by accident, falling into this role. I started off when I left school. It was a case of you either stayed on to do your A-levels or you get a job. There was none of this taking time out to think about what I wanted to do. So I didn't want to go back to school, so that was the big focus for me.
See, I'm much older than you. When I was asked to leave school, but before I was asked to leave school, I was told not to come back. But before then, careers advice consisted of this at the school I went to. It was, are you going to join the army or are you going to work in the dockyard? And if you went, they went, don't mess about, one or the other.
Yeah.
It's similar to careers. When I was leaving school, it was either catering, or catering.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go into catering. So I wanted to be a florist. I wanted to go into horticulture.
Okay.
That was the road I wanted to go down, but I didn't. So I ended up falling into DWP.
Right, okay.
So I was there for 28 years.
Wow, okay.
Took redundancy. Bit scary because you almost feel like you're institutionalised. You can't transfer your skills somewhere else. But actually,
you can.
And having the sort of benefit of the support by my family to make that jump, I did, and fell into working with disadvantaged youngsters within KCC, which I loved. Really enjoyed the 16 to 24-year-olds. And then transferred contract over to the team I'm currently working in now, which was great. So I've always enjoyed finding out about people, what help they need, what support they want, and can I be your conduit to get you there?
I love what you just said, because it highlights a problem that a lot of people think they have that they don't. yeah, which is this feeling of being institutionalized or being stuck in a role for an organization where you can't see the alternative. And you quite often see that when people are made redundant and they go, well, I've been doing this for 28 years or 30 years or whatever. I've just been made redundant from this. I can't see anybody else giving me a job. And the problem is looking at this in the wrong way. You're looking at where you do the job, not what you do.
Yes.
And it's about your transferable skills. Yeah. And there are lots of places to deploy transferable skills, all kinds of places to deploy transferable skills that have nothing to do with the institution you gain them in, if you see what I mean. Mm. You know, because they can be used. And, you know, in your life in DWP, you would have spent most of your life dealing with people that, and I would suspect that most of them had issues of one kind or another. Either they were struggling, you know, through poverty issues or abuse. You know, there's all kinds of reasons for the client list at DWP.
But the biggest skill that comes out of that is listening.
Yeah.
There's no point someone sitting in front of you needing help and you're taking them down the wrong path.
Yeah.
I've always said with the roles that we do, your listening skills are the biggest part of your role.
Absolutely. You can't move someone from A to B unless you understand A.
Yeah.
And one of the problems is a lot of people try to move everybody to B without understanding A, if that doesn't make too much stupid sense. So, no, it's absolutely true, because we tend to view things as if people are just being stupid when they're not. There's every reason why they are where they are. And whether you think that that's a good place to be or not is completely immaterial. They are where they are, and just telling them, you know, it's like people that suffer from mental health issues and people go and pull yourself together kind of thing. Or there's nothing to worry about, so stop worrying. So, you know, why are you stressed, you know? Well, that's not much of an answer, really.
No, it's not very helpful.
No, it isn't. Right, and I want, so two people who have a theme running through their life, which is people orientated, which isn't a surprise. I talk, when I do 30-30s, I talk about the three groups of transferable skills, which are skills with people, skills with things, and skills with data. Your people, that's not a surprise. That's your primary skill set,
definitely,
and you deploy that incredibly well. So I now want to move on and just tell people about the education people as an organization, you know, overall. What is it? How is it? What does it do?
So basically from September 2022, the education people are now part of the commercial services group, which obviously got an umbrella of a number of different organisations. Don't ask me to name them all. There's quite a few now, and it's ever growing, which is great. But yeah, the education people is kind of a one-stop solution for education services, which support the full range from early years to young adults. And the mission is to kind of set out early support from early years, childcare settings, schools, colleges to improve learning, wellbeing and child's development across Kent, but now obviously we're reaching out beyond that as well, which is great. We have a number of different services within our within the education people. Just to name a few, so we have our skills and employability team, which is all around skills, engaging with schools, careers offer, also looking at apprenticeships as well and making sure it's a viable route for young people. But also businesses have got that support to kind of someone to put their arm around the shoulder, in a sense, to give them that kind of support and guidance to go through. We have our school improvement team, which obviously says in the title, in a sense, it goes in and helps the schools to improve, continuous, and kind of reach the destination that they want to go to. We've got governor services. Again, I'm not going to go into the detail of them, but also it's there to, governors are vital important of a school setting, but it's also making sure that they're trained, that they understand what they're doing, what their role entails as well, so they can really bring a benefit to that particular school.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? I'm not a school governor, but I am a trustee of a number of charities. And a lot of academies are actually charities.
Yes.
So if you're a governor or a trustee, there are legal requirements as well as all kinds of other things about being there. So it is a very important job, and it is something that you really do need to understand.
Yeah, definitely. And got our early years and childcare. Like, education starts from such a young age, and I think sometimes that gets forgotten about at times as well throughout a young person's journey. So actually that's a really vital point in getting the fundamentals right from a young age. And obviously you can see that distance travelled from for young yeah. person. We have an outdoor learning team as well at Buell Water, which do a number of different activities and, okay. And look at a different curriculum for individuals that maybe might not be best suited for a school environment or have got better ways to express their talents and skill set as well. And then we've got, I won't bore people to death with this, but the school finance services as well, which obviously there's a lot that goes on behind it. I know, a lot behind yeah. that. But there's a number.
He's going to start telling me about VAT on education and yeah.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. But we got that side of things. But we do offer out a lot of training around safeguarding yeah. and to other educators. It's not just for Kent. Obviously, we work with the majority of schools across Kent, all schools across Kent. But also, we put our kind of expertise and knowledge out there to a wider range across the UK now and provide some training packages as well. So as a whole, really, you'll get a feel of it's that one-stop shop around education support and kind of supporting people making that transition from education to, yeah. to the world of work in a sense as well. So that's where it kind of leads on to kind
okay.
of...
Okay. Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the Education People is an organisation wholly owned by Kent County Council? Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're kind of like a... Sorry, taking a drink there. like a kind of sister company, we like to say, to Kent County Council in a sense, but now we fall under, yeah, the commercial services kind of umbrella.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Right, I want to move on now to what you two guys do.
This is the best bit.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a really interesting part of the whole skills, education, work mix, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So... kick off by telling us about your part of the Education People.
Yeah.
And sorry to interrupt you before you've even started. I first worked with some guys from your group when it was called Kent Supported Education. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if forgive me if I keep calling it that because this is what I'm used to, but yeah. but you go for it.
Yeah, cool. I'll kick off then and give a brief overview and then I'll probably... best to divulge into our roles because then you'll see exactly
yeah, yeah.
what that kind of leads to. And so the Education People are part of the specialist employment service. So we are a specialist provider of supported employment.
Yeah.
So what we do is we support people with disabilities across Kent,
yeah.
and breaking down them barriers to get into the workplace and think most importantly, sustainable work as well.
Yeah.
So we want the clients that we work with and open up the pathway for people with disabilities across the county to be yeah. able to get into work, make an impact and sustain it as well. So, but within that role as well, so obviously we work with people that could have physical disabilities, it could be learning disabilities, it could be from like the autistic spectrum condition.
Yeah.
So a wide range of different disabilities that obviously is for some people, not everyone, a barrier to enter into employment. So we're kind of coming along with that sledgehammer to hopefully knock down some of them barriers. And not only are we supporting our clients, is then looking at how we support businesses yeah. across the county
yeah.
to become more diverse, more inclusive in their workforce, and kind of answer some of them questions that necessarily you don't find answers for them online. I think people sometimes tread on eggshells talking around disabilities, and it's because sometimes you're just not educated. Now, sometimes I did prior to this role. Yeah. I didn't want to say anything to offend anyone, but actually there's some questions there that do need to be answered.
Yeah.
There's a way to do that.
When I first got involved in this 7 or 8 years ago, talking to employers
yeah.
about this, there was always a reticence. And the reticence is based on fear
yeah.
and non-understanding.
Exactly.
Yeah. Understand that.
You had a lot of small businesses that went, we'd love to help, but, you know, I don't know how to do this, or I can't afford to put in wheelchair ramps, or, you know, I don't know if you know, I'm the chairman of the Kent Deaf Children's Society,
yeah.
and we try and help our teenage kids into work. And one of the things I got all the time was, oh, well, we'd love to help, but if the fire alarms went off, they'd never know. And I go, we thought of that.
Yeah,
there exactly. is a way around that. But it's understandable. People, you know, people run small businesses and they'd like to help, but they fear the circumstances. And also, there's a lot of myths
yeah.
about employability.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, like you can't say this and you can't say that and you can't do this and you can't do that. And people worry about that. They go, I don't want to fall on the wrong side of the law,
so
I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah,
That's been changing over the last few years, though, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think from us as well, like, I think a big part of it, and I don't mean it's in the demeaning way to anyone, it's about educating people, really.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's having a more exposure to it, like neurodiverse at the moment.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Online, training, talking about it, which is fantastic.
Mm.
But actually, let's educate people around that, for instance, so that actually when people come to make, like say, the small business owners that are making decisions around roles that are coming up, or employability opportunities, then actually when you're educated more and you know more about it, it's a lot easier to hit that kind of conversation head on, really.
Absolutely. And there's also this thing that people don't always think through, and again I'm thinking from a business point of view, just how much talent
exists, missing out on.
Yeah, that they're missing out on because they're focusing on the wrong thing, you know. Yeah.
It's about ability.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it's all about. That's where, with the training arm of our service, they offer disability confidence training. So if there's employers out there that do want to reach out and support someone that has a disability to get back into work, contact us. That's what we're here for. We're here to support employers in Kent and Medway, as well as our clients that are referred into us.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute, about how we go about this whole process. But again, you're right. It's about breaking down barriers, and you've got the trouble is, so many employment opportunities are with small and medium sized businesses, and they're the hardest to get at because they don't tend to have HR professionals. You know, they tend to be owned and managed, and they don't have someone whose job it is to look after, you know, corporate social responsibility or anything like that. They're just a plumber, or an electrician or whatever they are. And so actually getting them to pay attention in the first place is quite hard.
Yeah.
But we'll kind of discuss that in a minute. But for me, having got involved with us a few years ago and met lots and lots of people from very different backgrounds with very different types of disabilities, the most glaring thing always that stood out for me were two things: the amount of talent that was out there and the passion that people have for wanting to work.
Definitely. And I think that's what we're really good at when people get referred to us, is people that want to get into work.
Yeah.
And that journey might not start by looking straight away for a job. It'd be getting them job ready, in a sense, and making sure their employability skills there, CV, how to apply it. What you kind of learn from a young age, well, you meant to learn, is in schools and progress forward. So we break it all real down. But then, like you say, it's looking at them barriers. And that's where it comes kind of into my role, really. So with employer engagement, so leading up on that, it's actually going out there, talking, putting the message out there to the, like I say, we can reach out to some of the largest businesses. They're probably a little bit easier for us because you've got an equality and diversity team there that you could speak to and liaise with directly. But like your example, you said you've got a one-man band as a plumber or a company or a small, like, 5 to 6 employers. So they're the more difficult ones. But actually, what sometimes we find is sometimes there's some roles that really struggle. A lot of businesses can struggle to find it. And like you said, talent is there. And this is so cheesy, but talent is there, but opportunity is not, for our clients, in a sense. And
absolutely.
And that's one of the real barriers that we knock down, is because when we can get a client in front of an employer and talk to them, sometimes our client will struggle to do that. Might not provide eye contact, might not be able to get across what they would like to come. Put them in a work trial, so actually doing the hands-on job that they'd be tasked to do, you'll see a different light of that particular client and see that, one, there's a great...
You're absolutely right. A friend of mine, Amanda Parvin, is an HR consultant. She runs a company called Ethical HR, and she's very active in this area. And one of the things she's been trying to do is invent, that's the best word for it, different ways of interviewing people with supported needs, because the confrontational across the desk face-to-face stuff doesn't suit huge numbers. It doesn't suit people that don't have supported needs sometimes, let alone people with supported needs. So that confrontational thing, and I don't expect you to say anything about this. This is my rant, not yours. One of the things we're really, really bad at in this country is hiring people. Yeah, we're really bad at interviewing. On Jobs in Kent, and I own the recruitment portal, I still see hundreds of job adverts that say the same thing, almost word for word, you know, and they talk about interviews and cut-off times and blah, 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 and you think, you're having a laugh, you know, we have a shortage of talent in this country. We have a shortage of people doing jobs, and you're trying to employ people by putting barriers in the way in terms of how you look at this.
Yeah,
it would be lovely if everybody had a 2-1 from Oxford and wanted to work for 10 grand a year, but they don't. So putting out job adverts that sound like that is just pointless. But it's laziness as much as anything else, and not knowing what to put, so they just copy what everybody else puts. And they do the same thing. They interview people. The fascinating thing about interviewing people
It's that you normally make the decision within the first 30 seconds just based on what you're looking at, without giving anybody a chance to explain themselves or anything else. And for people with supported needs and disabilities, that's a disadvantage straight away.
Straight away, absolutely. Yeah.
It needs to be an inclusive recruitment process.
Exactly.
It's offering a different way so everyone is able to access the workplace.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
And the thing is, as you said, is that there's so much underlying talent there.
But
as an employer, you've got to kind of draw that out a bit and make people feel comfortable to explain to you what it is that they can do or show you what they can do. And for a lot of people, even people without supported needs, it can be quite difficult to explain that in an interview.
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't that verbose.
No, exactly.
They prefer to show you.
Yes, exactly. Hands-on approach. So we kind of do that, and we support businesses with that change as well. It's not as in a sense we go, we think you should do a working interview, bye-bye. We'll go through that process with you and give you examples how it's worked previously as well.
But that's what I want to kind of explore now, if we can, is how the process works, what you guys do to try and dig that out, what you offer employers to help, and what you offer people with supported needs to help them deal with this. So let's kind of explore some of those things.
Yeah, kick it off with the employer stuff, and then I'll let Nikki go through the client support as well. So with an employer, I think first and foremost is looking at how disability confident they are. So obviously the government run a disability confidence scheme, which is great. It's a three-level approach to kind of go through where you can be committed, become an employer, become a leader in the market, which is great, because what that does as well, it's a self-reflection tool. And I say that to many small businesses or large businesses, it's a good opportunity to look at what you are currently doing and maybe in some ways what you're not doing and what you could do better. Or actually, you could go away and actually realise we're doing a lot here as well.
Funny enough, when I first joined the Disability Confident scheme for my certificate, one of the things that it taught me early on is how useful that was across the board.
Not
just for looking at employing people with disabilities. It made you think about your entire employment methodology as well.
Your strategies behind it, your procedures. Yeah, definitely. It opens up your eyes to how you can employ new talent into your business, whether they've got a disability or not, to be completely honest.
Exactly.
Like, we obviously focus on that disability side, really. And we kind of go in, and with that, like I said earlier, so put that arm around someone's shoulder to go, actually, it's fine in a sense that there might be some gaps in your practice. But let's work with us. Again, we're a free service across Kent that you can come and ask for advice, guidance, or actually, I'm interested, or we've got potentially might have a number of employers that have got disabilities, but we need to upskill our staff force, because we want them to understand these disabilities so they can work better. So with the process is, we kind of go in around that disability confidence scheme, really, and then we start to get a feel of where they're at and kind of what support that they might need. We do have a training offer as well, so it's a kind of like a good inclusive training offer. So it could be basic around disability confident, it could look at inclusive recruitment, it could be just providing your workforce a little bit more about diversity in a sense as well, so they get a better understanding of autism awareness, for instance. It could be around sort of bespoke packages for an employer that go, actually, we've got a gap in our training here, or we might need a little bit of help. That's great, fine. This is something we've not done before. We'll go away, we'll do it, and we'll work with you in a sense. So we kind of provide all that kind of package support around an employer. But then it's then, once we've got that opportunity, it's then going, right, so how do we put this into practice? We're working with a number of clients across Kent that have looking for work, and whether that could be supported internships, which I'd probably touch on a bit more as we go through, but it could be just to start off with a bit of work experience. Actually, it could be their first transition into the workplace. This could
absolutely
be new. So it could be new for the employer working, and it's new for our client as well. So it's actually, we're not just supporting one side, we're supporting both sides of it, which is for us, really, the main thing is just to raise awareness. And I think once we raise awareness and we can give that little bit of education around it, and again, we're not trying to belittle anyone, there's some great work that go out there, but also there's some real big companies out there across Kent that we are working with to support them, which you think actually they're probably at that standard. So it's no right or wrong way in a sense of how we get to that end goal. It's just kind of looking at how we can kind of
The funny thing is here, if you strip away the onion layers of fear and insecurities around a lot of this, it's actually the perfect virtuous circle, really. you know, as a country, we spend a huge amount of money paying people not to work, you know, in you know, all kinds of allowances. So for those people that can work, want to work and have the ability to work, it's a virtuous circle to actually get them work. Because one, they become productive members of society. Two, they contribute to society rather than draw money from it. And three, they set an example that inspires other people. You know, so from my point of view, I just think it's something that we need to think about more and more and more. I do get frustrated with employers that bemoan the fact that they can't find talent, but they don't look very far, if you see what I mean. They, you know, they have this very narrow tunnel of, you know, and a lot of it doesn't even make sense. I'm having a bit of a rant here, but
it
doesn't even make sense. And for some, I just explained, I left school when I was 14. I was asked to leave. I was quite happy to do that. And, I went and worked in a paper mill. And I got my job, actually. Somebody asked me how I got my job. I got my job. There were three of us applied for it, and I was the shortest.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how I got my job, because I was the shortest. It's a talent. It's a talent I don't have anymore, because I'm 6 foot two now, but back then I was 5 foot one. so talents come and go. But you know, you know, people go, oh, right, well, I need, you know, three GCSEs at CRI. Well, no, you don't. You need someone that can do the job or has the potential to do it. That's all you need. You don't need all these other things. A lot of them are used as props, because people go, oh, I don't like the amount of people that I speak to that go, I don't really like recruiting. I wish I didn't have to do this, but I desperately need people. And then they'll put up a job ad or whatever that's just rubbish. I mean, it's just copied off. It's boilerplate, you know, that's copied off the internet somewhere. And you go, you do really put a bit of effort into it, because it will make so much difference to your business if you actually thought about who you were employing and why you were employing them. So I kind of get all that. I want to tell a story as well, back from my early days of being involved with Kent Support and Employment. We used to do an annual seminar at County Hall. And the idea behind it was to try and get employers there to hear the experiences of employers that had employed people with supported needs and some of the workers with supported needs. And I remember one of the very first ones. There was a chap there. He was a general manager. I can't remember where from. He was general manager of some kind of park home thing in West Kent. I can't remember where. Solomon's or someone like that. He was talking about the fact that they'd hired some people with supported needs and how pleased they were with them and all the rest of it. He then introduced us to one of the workers. It was a lad called Chris. And Chris was brilliant. Chris was quite severely autistic, but he did a talk about his work at this place. And before he came on, they showed a video of what they actually did in the grounds of this place, landscaping and cutting the grass and cups in the trees and all that kind of stuff. And Chris stood up and he went, I don't do none of that. I do trees.
Straight to the point.
Yeah. And everyone went, right. He went, oh, I'm bloody good at trees. He said, I'll do trees. Wow. And his general manager went, I need you to listen to this because he is absolutely stunning at trees. They then showed a video of the work that this Chris had done, and there was a sharp intake of breath in the audience that went, really?
Yeah.
You did that? Mm. Yeah, I do trees. Me, I do trees. They're my trees.
Yeah.
And it suddenly dawned on everybody that having just smiled at this lad, you know, for his approach to it, when they saw what he actually did, it just blew them away.
Yeah,
And all of a sudden it changed the dynamics of how they viewed that lad, and I loved that story because it was just it just hit the nail on the head in terms of what you're getting.
It's perfect as well. Yeah. Like me and Nikki can sit here today and talk all the positive stuff and work that we do with her. But actually, from an employer that might be listening, you want to hear from like-minded employers as well.
Yeah,
have you worked with this service? And please do have a look on our kind of LinkedIn or our kind of socials, because we will showcase work that we've done with other businesses. Because we realise that's a real benefit to some of our business to see that other like-minded businesses are kind of leading the way in a sense, yeah. but are willing to support other businesses as well going forward. So, yeah. and like you say, with the example that you just said there, was like, what a great example that is.
It's
as well.
Lovely.
Like,
it was just lovely. You know, it just nailed it. He was just so brilliant, and he was passionate about what he did.
Yeah.
He had no fear of the audience. He didn't, you know, he had no pretensions. He went, this is what I do. This is how I do it. Have a look. And I could.
Here's the evidence.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah. Which is fantastic. There's a lot of talent out there.
Oh, so much. Yeah, 100%. And I think, like you say, we're looking at recruitment and I think making it more accessible as well. And like you say, I think at times I agree with what you say with it. Some job adverts you look out there and go, well, that's been done in 5 minutes. And why am I even reading it? And yeah. why is one of our clients going to read it? But actually, it's having little kind of basic things like having an email address or telephone number to ring up. Like someone with a disability that would want to find out a little bit more information. One, they might feel nervous about applying anyway, but actually having a conversation with someone or someone from their like a support service, like what we would do, having that conversation to find out a little bit more about is really, really effective as well. Having that disability confident logo, I know there's a lot of employers out there that go, what's the benefit? What am I going to get from this? But actually having that on your kind of job advert, it showcases that you're going to listen to the needs of the clients that we're going to be working alongside properly, and actually you're going to be opening up alternative ways to come. And also coming into employment, we all talk about the younger generation nowadays, not got enough work experience, they need to get into the world of work. But actually, like, things like supported internships are kind of sitting under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
And actually, they're really important. I think they kind of, the government brought it in 2013, so what's that, nearly, that's 10 years ago now, into its 11th year. And actually, it's a great opportunity for a young person, or say a young adult that's got an education healthcare plan, actually to make that transition from leaving education into the workplace. And yet again, it's no cost to the employer as well. It's a work experience placement that can go up to sort of 12 months. But what you get to do is kind of like a working interview in a sense with a young person. Yeah, yeah. They grow as a person as they become more competent in what they're tasked to do. Yes, don't get me wrong, you might put some extra time and resource at the start of that. But what you could end up with doing, and what we see with many of our clients, is they're working still with you 10, 15, 20 years down the line in a sense. So actually, the money that you would have saved from your kind of recruitment costs in the long run can outweigh some of the kind of real gains that you're going to get at the beginning as well. So I still just wanted to kind of make people aware that they're still around there, and we still need employers to kind of buy into that as well.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about what you were saying and thinking about my life and when I started work and how I started work. And it suddenly dawned on me how things have changed. And I kind of suspect this is the case. When I was a kid, it wasn't particularly difficult to get a job, really. You just rocked up and applied and, you know, they either gave you the job or they didn't. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, there weren't many places you could apply for a job, but you knew where you could apply for a job, yeah? And lots of kids got hired. That was the thing. I mean, I worked at Turkey Mill in Maidstone when it was a paper mill.
Yeah.
And I think probably 15%, 20% of the workforce were all kids from my age group at school that had all piled over there and got jobs there.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think to myself why that was. But of course, the big thing that was different then to now is once people had a job, they stayed in it for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
People didn't change jobs. So if you wanted to hire people, you hired from the bottom all the time, if you see what I mean. So you hired young people training, you know, they'd come in, they'd spend a couple of years training, and then they kind of grow into the job, and then the older people would all retire and the next phase would come along. Well, of course, that doesn't happen anymore. People change jobs every couple of years. You know, there's a big fight over hiring people, and we don't hire enough trainees. We don't hire enough young people. We don't hire apprentices in the same way that we used to.
Yeah.
And that's something that we need to change.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
Sorry?
Youth training scheme.
Yeah, yeah, there was all kinds of things. I remember going, after I'd worked at Turkey Mill for a while, we were made redundant, okay? Because it was coal powered, it was steam powered place. I sound really old now, don't I? And the miners went on strike, yeah? So there was a coal shortage and the paper mill went bust and we were all thrown out of work. And I went to the youth employment office. And they said, right, what do you want to do? And I thought, I don't like this manual labour stuff. It's hard work. I went, oh, I don't know. I want to do something in an office. And they went, oh, we've got a test to see if you're any good. What was I? I was about 16. And I did this test, and they gave me this piece of paper, and it said, would you prefer to lay bricks, cut grass, add up a column of figures, or do the, you know, I'll just go, indoors, I want to work indoors, yeah. And I ticked all these things, and they went away and analysed, and they came back and they went, you'd be perfect for an office job. I went, yes.
Sign me up.
Yeah, sign me up, I'll have one of those. Yeah. But we don't give people opportunities, and that's my point, and we're wasting talent.
Yeah, massively.
It doesn't take long for people to get up and running, in reality, you know, once you give them a chance.
I think on that as well, I think to touch on the point, we don't just work with clients to get the job, it's then working with the client and the employer afterwards with that in-work support is vitally important, as well it is for the client, but for the employer as well. So it's not like we...
You don't walk away.
We make sure that, because the whole point of it is to be sustainable.
Yeah.
Not then, if the client does decide to move on to another role in the future, they've got the skill set of working with us and they've gained the knowledge, which is great.
Yeah.
But more than likely they don't, because actually they're thankful for the opportunity that they've been given.
Yeah.
They've been given a lot of time and resource on, and actually they're becoming a real good asset to the work that they're doing. So
absolutely,
it's providing that in-work support collectively as a whole, which is something that we're probably different to some organisations that do that as well.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, Shane. It's vitally important from both sides of that equation that support exists, because from a small employer's point of view, that's their worry. What if I'm left holding the can here? You know, I've got someone that's really difficult, I don't know what to do about it, and you know.
Yeah, it's very person-centred, our approach. I've got two roles. I work alongside Shane with the employee engagement side, but I also have a small caseload of clients that I work with.
Right.
And I could have a caseload of 10 clients and have a different approach to each client. So it's depending on the need of the person that's been referred in to me. So it's all about the five stages of supported employment.
Yep.
So it's customer engagement, getting to know our client with the vocational profiling as well. So it's all about what makes our clients tick, what are their interests, what are their goals. It's all about employer engagement, finding the right employers, but helping them, support them to find the right employers. We don't just do it for them. We help give them the tools to be able to do it independently. Some clients have more support needs than others. Then we also look at the job matching, and then also, as Shane just mentioned, that the in-work supports are sort of like an animate fee but without the warts. Right. But they're as long as they need us.
Cool. That's brilliant. Look, we're fast running out of time. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to end the show shortly. So thank you for that. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Leave us with a message about what our listeners can do to help you.
I think first and foremost, engage with us. We want you to engage and want you to find out more and learn. And like I said, I've kind of said this word a few times, but let's help educate you around becoming disability confident. We want to provide more opportunities, whether that's work experience, paid employment. You know, if you're struggling to recruit as well for a particular role, speak to us. Yeah. Like I said, we've got a real good talent pool there of individuals across Kent that are ready to go into work. So we kind of want to speak to that. But it's great of us talking about it. We are a member of BASE, which is the British Association for Supported Employment as well. So that's kind of what recently we've had our kind of in education point of view, mini Ofsted, the dreaded words of that. But we've got an excellent model of that. We're one of the kind of the leaders across the service, across the country now. So we do, as you probably tell from me and Nicky, really passionate. We've got a team behind us that is fantastic. Yeah. And years of experience working in this field as well. So it showcases when people do work with us, stay there because they've got that passion about it. So if you're a business and you want to find out more, undertake some of our training, come and speak to us, have a conversation. That's all we ask for. If it's not for you in that time, we're not going to be knocking on your door every 5 minutes, have you got a job. We'll let you be, but we'll come back at a more practical, reasonable time for you and provide that support. So just a great
opportunity. There's I've put a link on the Kent Business Radio website that goes straight to your page in Education People.
Perfect, thank you.
Bypassing all the other nonsense.
I didn't say that.
Just before you go, we've had a couple of tweets while you've been on air. Justin Dean said, I missed the first half of the show, but I'm tuned into this part of the show, listening to the guests, education people, really informative. Trey Ferguson says, there's always a backstory. We don't need to know what it is, but to appreciate that for others to make the right choices for them at each stage of their journey, they have to want something different. And I agree, listening without judgment or an agenda is vital. loving the Business Bunker conversation around breaking down barriers with Shane and Nicola. I like the term different ability to disability. Talent is in so many diverse places and forms. I don't enjoy the formal interview process. I'd much rather have a chat as both interviewer and interviewee.
There we go. Music Tarius.
Yeah. Amazing story, Reed Chris. I do trees. Great gift. It is a wonderful gift. Just wonderful. Thank you for sharing, Paul. I now want to see Chris's trees. They're really worth looking at. I'll tell you, basically, the lad does topiary, where he carves chickens and rabbits and stuff out of trees. And absolutely stunning. There's a few other tweets, but all along the same lines. Listen, thank you so much, both of you, for coming and telling us about the fantastic work that you do in the education people. It's an absolute pleasure, and we wish you continued success with what you're doing. Putting people with talent into work, making them productive members of society is an incredibly important thing to do, and we have a lot of admiration for that.
Very quickly, we're both on LinkedIn, so if you wanted to get in contact with either me or Shane, then look us up, stalk us. I don't mind being stalked on this occasion.
So that's Nicola Brandon and Shane Foster that you can find. They both work for Education People. I think if you put in Education People, you can find all the employers on LinkedIn anyway.
Yeah.
So do check that out. I think we're almost at the end of the show. A developer behind new plans to regenerate a dockside industrial estate which could create hundreds of jobs is asking for people's thoughts. Businesses and residents are being consulted on proposals for an employment and enterprise zone at Chatham Docks. The developer has now unveiled its project for a business campus called Basin 3. It wants to transform the existing brownfield land into a 31,000 square metre, that's big, of adaptable workspace with the opportunity to create hundreds of jobs and apprenticeships. So cool. I'm just going to garble through a couple of these. Enbridge Consulting has been named the best professional services at the Gravesham Business Awards. Business transformation consultancy Enbridge Consulting is celebrating its recent award win at the Gravesham Business Awards, where it was named best professional services business of 2023. The Kent-based consultancy achieved the coveted award after a milestone year and period of sustained growth for the firm, which has seen them deliver 25 new digital change projects and secure 8 new managed service clients, including Auto Trader and Brunel University. So, well done to Enbridge. I think we've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to my two guests, Nicola and Shane, of the Education People, to everybody that tweeted and emailed. I want to wish my lovely co-host, Jules, a speedy recovery. We did miss you, Jules, and sorry about taking the mickey. No, I'm not. We'll see you next week. Listen, thank you to everybody that joined in. Have a fun, safe and enjoyable week, everybody. We'll be back with another Business Bunker show next week. For the moment, bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul.